With everything going on nowadays, this amazing news maybe didn't get the attention that it deserved. But New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the state is on track to end the AIDS epidemic by the end of 2020. Welcome. Thanks for being a part of the full story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. It was indeed a major announcement, especially in light of all the dire predictions just from a few decades back. So it made us want to find out a bit more, and we've invited a number of experts to join us today to explain what this means. And of course, we always welcome your comments and your questions. You can do that by sending us an email. That email address is tfs@wshu.org. Or you can comment on our Facebook page at Full Story WSHU. Now, as I mentioned, we have a number of guests to speak with us today, and we're going to start by calling in Dr. Anthony Santella, an associate professor of public health in the School of Health Professions and Human Services at Hofstra University. Dr. Santella, welcome, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Were you surprised by the governor's announcement, or was this expected?
Most of us who work in HIV prevention, care, and treatment knew we've made great strides in the last few years, especially since the governor's ending the epidemic blueprint. But I was a bit surprised that, he made really strong statements by the end of 2020, in a little over a year, we'll have reached the major milestone that's needed to truly say we've ended the AIDS epidemic.
Can you parse it for us? I mean, put it into layman's terms.
Sure.
What does this mean?
Sure. So as you mentioned earlier, in the early days of the epidemic, we're talking about the early 90s, there were about 15,000 people diagnosed each year with HIV or AIDS in New York State. Now, fast forward, in 2013, the year before the governor's plan was released, we had about 3,000 new cases. So, we've made great progress in the 2000s with advances with new medication, paying for things like HIV testing, the HIV prevention pill, PrEP, and other sorts of initiatives. But 3,000 is still a lot. And so what the governor and his task force unveiled in 2014 was a 3-point plan to get us to what we consider below epidemic numbers. And what that means is we will always have people living with HIV and AIDS in New York State. We'll always have some new cases of HIV and AIDS. But when we get to the point where the number of new HIV infections is lower than the number of HIV-related deaths, then we can say there's no longer an epidemic. And so what they proposed in 2014 was a number around 750. And now we're not near there yet. The latest number that he just unveiled last week was a little under 2,500, about 2,480 a new infection. So we still have quite a bit way to go. But because of all these efforts in terms of, like I said, providing over $20 million in supporting the initiative since 2015, we've made great strides. And so the governor's plan has three main points. The first is to identify people living with HIV who are not diagnosed and link them to medical care. So that's all about HIV testing. Everyone should know their HIV status. Number two, it's those people who are diagnosed with HIV, making sure they're getting on HIV medication so that the virus can be suppressed in their body and that they have a full healthy life and can really achieve their full health potential. And then the third point is facilitating access to pre-exposure prophylaxis. And pre-exposure prophylaxis, better known as PrEP, the acronym PrEP, is the Food and Drug Administration HIV prevention pill that people who are HIV negative and have some level of risk can take to remain negative. And we've done a great job with addressing all three of those points in New York State. So I'm confident that, what the governor said will hold true. And, we'll only really know at the beginning of 2021, if we, really achieved our milestone.
I just want to clarify, because someone said to me the other day they thought the reporting or the wordage used was somewhat inaccurate, because when we say it's ending, and as you pointed out, there are still going to be cases going forward in the future.
Yeah, so the key word in all of what he's saying is epidemic. There will always, and I know, most people don't realize what an epidemic is, and we have a whole discipline in our field of public health. It's epidemiology, which is really the study of disease distribution, outbreaks, figuring out the who, what, when, why, how of how diseases work. But that's the key word, epidemic. And like I said, what the epidemiologists have suggested is that when the number of new cases is lower than the number of HIV-related deaths, then we could say we no longer have an epidemic. But we will always, we don't want to truly end HIV/AIDS in New York State, because that would mean there are no people living with HIV/AIDS in New York State. And, of course, we want people who are living with HIV to have a long, healthy life and good quality of life. So, there will always be people living with HIV. And like I said, with a state with our population size, we'll always, and considering that, it's an LGBT mecca for many people, we'll always have people with, getting diagnosed with HIV. But those numbers will hopefully reduce dramatically.
Doctor, are other states copying what New York State has done?
New York's, well, I'm not sure I would use the word copying, but a lot of states and local jurisdictions do have their own ending the epidemic blueprints, strategies, whatever you want to call the document. The major players are the major states that you would guess, places like California, New York, and then also some local jurisdictions, some major cities, like New York City, for example, because they had the resources, to put forth their own plans, have even drilled down to the local level. But there's, probably well over 100 different ending the epidemic plans nationally. Moreover, just, a couple of months ago, President Trump announced that the federal government was also going to invest multiple millions of dollars in ending the HIV/AIDS epidemic by 2030, so, slightly different time point. And so what they're proposing is more or less the same thing, but really looking at it from the federal, from a federal level, and looking to reduce the total cases, the total new number of new cases nationwide, in this next 10-year period. Because nationally, we have somewhere in the mid to high 30s, we say about 35 to 38,000 new infections each year. And so, we want to get that number again of new cases below the number of HIV-related deaths.
Dr. Santella, can I ask you to give us some historical perspective? Because even though it was decades ago, it seems like yesterday that there were some who predicted that this would get much worse as time went on and it would be with us forever.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back in like historical documents and documentaries and media clippings, et cetera, the way we thought about HIV and AIDS really has gone from 0 to 100 in the course of the 30 plus years of the epidemic, at least the known epidemic. HIV has been around much longer than the first diagnosed cases in the late 70s and early 80s. But in the first 5 or so years of the epidemic, where most of the efforts were focused on gay men, and other kind of more vulnerable or marginalized community, like people who inject drugs, certain racial ethnic groups, particularly Haitians, hemophiliacs, et cetera. The federal administration at the time thought this would be kind of a one and done. We'd have a vaccine, we'd have good testing, we'd have a whole myriad of biomedical technologies and medications that would really make this like every other chronic manageable disease. And fast forward to today, HIV is a chronic manageable disease. Someone who's diagnosed today, who goes on medication pretty quickly, will live a long, healthy life and have a life expectancy similar to most other people. But that's really not what's happened. HIV is a very smart virus. And while, scientists, including those from federal agencies like the Centers for Disease Control, National Institute of Health, university researchers, et cetera, have, committed really their whole professional lives and careers to kind of solving the HIV virus, we really haven't been able to do that. A vaccine would be groundbreaking, and we could really see the end of this as a major public health issue if we had a vaccine. But unfortunately, most of the, virtually all the vaccine candidates that have been tested to date have not proven successful. And there are current clinical trials, both domestically and globally, that are looking to see if, you know, the newer vaccine candidate options would be successful in eliminating the virus. But, you know, as you may know, you know, to go from concept to pharmacy, that's about 30-year time period. And if we're still at the point where we're doing basic clinical trials, not even like large, we're talking about small clinical trials, you know, it's going to be at least 10 to 20 years before we maybe see a vaccine. So, you know, we shouldn't rely on that. And we should really focus on the other tools that we have in our toolbox, particularly the pre-exposure prophylaxis or PrEP, the prevention pill. It works when taken correctly and consistently.
Doctor, I only have 45 seconds left for the segment. Have you spoken with teens and those in their 20s? I'm wondering what their perspective is on this, especially compared to those of us who've known some who have died from AIDS.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, just as a, you know, a college professor who teaches sexual health to those who are, you know, their late teens and early 20s, most, I would say 90% of my students over the past 11 years that I've been a professor have very little to no knowledge about sexual and reproductive health. And that's because, not surprising, we don't have age-appropriate, medically accurate, school-based sex education in this country. And until we really revolutionize the way K-12 education deals with sexual and reproductive health, we really can't expect young people's, you know, behaviors to change.
Dr. Anthony Centella, an associate professor of public health in the School of Health Professions and Human Services at Hofstra University. Dr. Centella, we always appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
It's The Full Story on WSHU. We'll be back after a break. And it's The Full Story on WSHU, and we're continuing our discussion, which was prompted by the announcement the other week from New York Governor Cuomo that New York State could end the AIDS epidemic in the state by the end of next year, 2020. If you want to jump in with your comment on today's program, email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org, on Facebook, we're at Full Story WSHU. And remember that all our shows are available as podcasts. You can download The Full Story on Google Play or on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Spotify. We have three more guests for you for the next segment. Santino Dunham and Rafael Rivera are care navigators at Project Safety Net, which was formerly the Long Island Association for AIDS Care. Santino, Rafael, how are you? Thanks for coming on today.
Doing great today. Hi, this is Santino.
Fantastic. How are you? Rafael, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm great. Thank you for asking. I appreciate that. Halim Kaygazes is Director of Health and Outreach Services for the Economic Opportunity Council of Suffolk. Hi, Halim.
How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing well.
Halim, what's your reaction to the governor's announcement?
I mean, that's a very, for a community service organization, it's a very proud step for us as service providers in the community to receive the recognition from Governor Cuomo, because a lot of his commitment to ending the epidemic in New York State has supported a lot of the funding from the AIDS Institute to help agencies reach out to the population. We've created programs that have allowed us to use state-certified peers to help reach this population and connect those that were either virally unsuppressed or lost to care, even newly diagnosed, to get them into care to initiate antiretroviral treatment as quickly as possible to achieve maximum viral suppression. And as a result, you know, you've had a great decrease in the amount of new infections.
And Halim, I know you brought up Governor Cuomo's name, and I think from a historical perspective, too, for those of us who have been who have known and reported on the AIDS epidemic going back to the 80s, it was actually his father who got things going back in the 80s.
Yeah. So, I mean, Governor Cuomo, he's put New York in a position to set themselves as a paradigm for other states to follow, because this is a bold new step, and other states are actually – there's actually been one other state that's contacted me to see how we actually got this effectively with the peer programs to help connect individuals to care.
Fantastic. I'm so glad you brought that up. I was talking about that with Dr. Centella in the first segment. I want to pick up on that subject in just a moment. But Santino, Rafael, I would like to get your reaction before we get to that. Santino, can I start with you, please?
Yeah, sure. So after hearing Governor Cuomo's announcement last week that we're on track to ending the epidemic, I do think it is a great achievement that we should be proud of as a state. We are one of the epicenters of the epidemic in the nation, so I think it's a great step forward for us to be on track to ending the epidemic.
Raphael, please.
I also agree with Santino. I think it's a great way that we're able to help these people that are in need, and as well as we've come so far from the 80s till now where we are moving forward to ending the epidemic.
And for those of us old enough, and as a reporter at that time when the AIDS epidemic was first starting, I have to tell you that some of the news reports and some of the programs that we did, a lot of the forecasts, fortunately, were wrong. I mean, obviously, what has occurred has still been terrible. But if you heard some of the reports from back then, it was simply going to get worse, and it was going to be with us forever. So I'm with you, I guess, is what I'm saying, that this is just an amazing turnaround, if you will. Santino, Raphael, I was just actually looking for a reaction.
Well, I actually think it's something positive that we're moving towards. I would say myself as a HIV positive person who has been positive now for about, I would say, 5 years. It's a great way that I have a job in this, how can I say, in this field where I'm able to put my own experience and be able to help others out there that don't know as much as I do and that know that this is something that is controllable and you can live a normal, healthy life.
Halim, I want to step back for 1 second just to pick up on what you were saying just a few minutes ago, that you have been contacted by, what, one other state?
Yeah, one other state.
And what have they asked?
Well, they were primarily concerned about how we were able to get the peer certification program off the ground. And we let them know that this is actually an initiative under Governor Cuomo's ending the epidemic to create this peer worker certification because, you know, research has proven that peers are really effective in service delivery. And New York State has created 3 separate tracks, all directly intended to impact the rate of transmission of HIV in New York State by creating a peer certification not only for HIV, but for a harm reduction model and for a hepatitis C specialty.
Okay, I need you just to clarify this a little bit more. What exactly is a peer certification program?
All right, so the peer certification program consists of 500 hours of practicum experience, and it consists of 90 hours of specialized training. On a part-time basis, it takes about 6 months to complete, if you know, through full commitment. And what our agency did is that we offered employment to 2 of our peers to work for the agency and work with the individuals who we were targeting to get them the certification while they were serving our clients. And, you know, just this past Friday, they attended the graduation in New York City. So now they're officially certified peer navigators.
Santino, are you concerned in the least that this news, which is obviously somewhat positive, if you will, because it's indicating that things are trending in the right direction, and obviously work still needs to be done, but are you concerned that some may let their guard down, if you will?
I do believe that there always is the possibility that some may let their guard down, but by Governor Cuomo making this announcement that we're on track to ending the epidemic, I think it's also bringing the situation more to light for those that haven't heard about it, because things could be repeatedly put on the news and it has to be there for a few times for someone to hear it. So at the same time, we're having people maybe like get a little more laid back. I also do think that we're raising awareness for it as well.
Raphael, what's your perspective on that question?
I do think I'm super happy that they have this goal, but it, on another light, it does make me a little concerned that I feel that since it's no longer an epidemic, I think that people would think it's okay to go ahead and do things without protection or any of that sort, because it's not such a big deal anymore. But in reality, you always want to protect yourself. You always want to make sure that you take the right precaution to go ahead and live a healthy and safe life and also have a safe sex life as well.
Hmm. Halim, what do you need to do a better job, which would make your life a little bit easier, which would get it so that you could do your job more effectively?
We're not going to limit our focus to HIV. We are extending our focus to catching hepatitis C early, to catching other STDs early, and other diseases that are known to that are associated with behaviors that are known to transmit HIV, and certain diseases that are piggybacking off of HIV. The advent of PrEP has, you know, helped reduce the rate of transmission as well, but it's also, if we've looked at the statistics, there's also been an increase in syphilis transmission. And, you know, we can't ignore the things that we hear before HIV, the syphilis, the chlamydia, the gonorrhea, the hepatitis C. Those diseases are still prevalent. And, you know, you're looking at a body that's, it has an immune system to fight things, but other conditions complicate the ability of the human body to fight off and deal with other diseases, including HIV, so that, you know, the existence of another infection in the human body can cause a spike in viral load, and it can cause that unsuppressed, that suppressed level to shoot up to a level where the transmission incidence or possibility increases. And then we're going to be basically working against ourselves. So we just can't stay focused with the tunnel vision on HIV alone. We have to keep pushing forward to catch STDs, to catch hepatitis C, and to work on the behaviors in the population that are known to transmit these diseases.
Okay, so Santino, how do you get people to change the behaviors? Human behavior is a fickle thing. And I mean, it's tough for us to change our behaviors. How do you do that?
So one thing that our organization does specifically, we have behavioral interventions that we could do with our clients. So I've gone to trainings around the country and their trainings through the CDC, and basically their behavioral interventions that we go get trained in for a few days, and then we're able to implement them with our clients so that we can change their behaviors, attitudes around HIV, condom use, STIs, having sex with multiple partners, and stuff like that. So one of the interventions that we do specifically is called personal cognitive counseling. And that intervention is for repeat testers. So basically, if we have a client that keeps coming in for testing, we'll recommend them to do personal cognitive counseling. And within that session, we kind of let the client take the lead in the intervention. And we kind of have them go through the thought process of why they're having unprotected sex, in hopes of getting them to realize maybe they should either stop having unprotected sex or at least decrease the unprotected sex.
So therapy, stop and think about what you're doing. What are your actions, basically?
Mm-hmm.
Raphael, have you tried to change anyone's behaviors?
I've actually had the opportunity to help a few individuals that have came to us for testing and unfortunately did test positive for HIV. I was able to give them my personal experience and also help them with navigating their feelings and, you know, letting them know that this is something that is, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's something that you can move forward in life, live a healthy life, you know, and you could also get on medical adherence, which you can get to being virally suppressed. So I think that's a perfect thing that we do. We also have another intervention that's Voices, which is, it helps the client or the individuals that come in. We teach them about all the different type of condoms, how to put the condom on. We also show them different videos and things like that. So we're definitely going the right way of doing the whole prevention thing when it comes to our agency.
Halim, I'm sitting here and I'm stepping back in time for a little bit because I think that if I had attempted to do this program a few decades ago, I would have gotten in trouble. And it's just amazing to me how times have changed for the better, for getting the word out.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I mean, we came from a long way back in the 80s. You know, when, you know, it was the stigma is still there, but, you know, education has increased, governmental support has increased. You know, our governor is a visionary in trying to eliminate this epidemic. He's taken steps that many other states don't even think of taking. And I know he's not going to give up on this initiative until he gets to that desired result. He wants to totally eradicate HIV in New York State. He wants to eradicate new transmissions. He wants to increase public awareness. He wants to increase access to services. He wants to support those entities that will help eliminate the virus, including community-based organizations, medical providers, anything and everything with an all-hands-on-deck call to really eradicate HIV.
With the four and a half minutes I have left, I'm going to step back to a question that I asked Dr. Santella in the very first segment of this program, which was basically about what are teens thinking nowadays and those in their 20s? Can you tell me when you speak with them, what are they saying about this news and what are they thinking about HIV and AIDS? Raphael, can I start with you, please?
Sure. When I go ahead and speak to these teens, it's a lot because they definitely don't see it as a big thing when you tell them that, you know, all their behaviors are risky. They see it as just fun or, you know, it's what's going on now in society and different things like that. So it's kind of hard to navigate them the right way, but I definitely do my best to give them all the proper information. We give them a lot of literature. We give them our cell numbers that we get work numbers. So we have them call us at any time if they need anything, they are allowed to call us. If they need us to go to, let's say, a parking lot, their job or anything to deliver condoms, we do that. So we go out of our way to make sure that these kids are definitely educated and prepared for whenever the situation is presented to them.
Santino, what kind of feedback do you get?
So I do a lot of testing in colleges throughout Long Island, so I have a lot of experience with teens and people in their 20s. So what I've tended to notice a lot is that these teens and specifically people in college, they do know about HIV, they do know about STIs, but at the end of the day, they don't feel they're at risk for acquiring HIV. They do think that they could get an STI, but they feel that HIV is like an old disease and that it's not really going to affect them.
That's an interesting perspective. I haven't heard that one before. Halim, when you speak with teens and those in their 20s, what are you hearing?
I'm hearing a lot of the same things that Santino and Raphael were speaking about. The one good thing is because of the way our agency is set up, we have other programs that are in the school, so we have established relationships with the school administrators, with PTA organizations, and things like that. We're not just trying to attack us on our own. So we understand that the youth today, they do have this sense of invincibility, and you know, it's just not going to happen to them. So you know, we're bringing the parents on board to have these discussions to say, listen, the education doesn't just stop and start in the schools. You have to help. You have to talk with your kids. You have to, you know, your kids are going to have sex if they want to, whether or not you know about it or not. You just got to make sure that they're not putting themselves in a position to become infected with HIV or even STDs for that matter. It does take a lot of collaboration across disciplines and professions and, you know, bringing the parents on board. You have to get a lot of buy-in from the parents because, you know, the average parent doesn't want anybody talking to their child about sex and diseases except them. And, you know, what the message the parents want sent to their kids is abstinence. Don't do it until you're married. And, you know, that's just not the effective message nowadays.
You know, that sense of invincibility, I think every teen has had that since the beginning of time.
Absolutely.
Santino, Raphael, I've got about 45 seconds left, 1 minute. I'm going to give each of you 30 seconds for final thoughts, please. Santino, can I start with you, please?
Sure. So I just want to say I do think that Governor Cuomo and New York are headed in the right direction. I do hope that we can end the epidemic by 2020, and I have high hopes for that.
Raphael?
I'm also going to piggyback on what Santino is saying. I definitely think Governor Cuomo is going in the right direction, and I definitely think that we are going to be able to end this epidemic in 2020.
And Halim, you get the last word, please.
Yeah, I'm really thankful for a governor that's able to keep supporting initiatives like this, and we just have to keep the course and, you know, don't give up the funding and don't stop supporting community-based organizations that are really doing a lot of foot-to-the-ground work to get this to meet these goals.
Halim Kagaziz is Director of Health and Outreach Services for the Economic Opportunity Council of Suffolk, and Santino Dunham and Raphael Rivera are with Project Safety Net. Thank you all. I appreciate the discussion today.
Thank you so much.
Be well.
All right, take care.
If you would like to comment on today's program, you can email us. We're at tfs@wshu.org. Facebook, find us at Full Story WSHU. And if you want us on a podcast, you can download the Full Story on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're a part of the Full Story on WSHU. I'm Ron Ropiak, and I invite you to join us on Facebook. We're at Full Story WSHU. We're going to continue the discussion now with three guests, but I'm just going to start with two of them, and I'll explain why in a moment. Dr. Lynn Sosa is Connecticut's deputy state epidemiologist. Dr. Sosa, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on today. How are you?
Thanks. Thank you.
And Dante Gennaro is joining us also, HIV prevention program specialist at the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Hey, Dante, how are you?
Hi, Ron. I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, thank you. Thanks for asking. Dr. Sosa, we've been talking a lot about New York. How's Connecticut?
So we certainly are working towards the same goals that New York is in terms of our HIV patients. So currently in Connecticut, we estimate we have 10,560 people living with HIV. But we estimate that there are about 18,000 Connecticut residents who are at risk for contracting HIV. And at this point in time, we have 89% of our residents with HIV are aware of their status. But we have about, what that means is 11% or about 1,100 people who don't know yet that they have HIV. And, you know, a lot of what we're doing is making sure that people are on the right treatment and connected to care. So of those 10,560 people living with HIV in Connecticut, 66% are virally suppressed. So that is really important, not just for their health, but it also means they cannot pass the virus to other people. It's important to note that the national goal for viral suppression is 80%. So we know we have more work to do there.
I guess I'm a little confused by some of the numbers. I mean, have they been tested, but they did not receive the results? But you know that they...
No, so this is people who we are, you know, estimating the
number estimating.
Of people
okay.
that have HIV.
Got it.
Who just don't know yet. And so, you know, one of the things that we do is we do fund HIV prevention sites. We fund 27 throughout the state. And those are, their job is really to go out and find people who are at risk for HIV and make sure that they get tested.
Thanks for clarifying that. I appreciate it. Dante, I was reading a bit about your background. I believe there was an article. It might have been in the Stanford Advocate. Would you mind sharing some of your background with our listeners?
So back in 2012, I actually was diagnosed with HIV, and I began volunteering at a local HIV nonprofit called, at the time, AIDS Project New Haven. And that sort of immersed me with the HIV prevention field, and I began doing outreach testing and linkage to care work, which involved going out and finding people who were highest at risk for contracting HIV and testing them, and anybody who... was found to be HIV positive, we would get them linked into medical care, and people who were negative, we would link them to PrEP to prevent them from being exposed and infected with HIV. So from 2012, I just started working on a number of different projects. I was recruited to work on an international social media photo campaign called HIV Equal, which involved organizing HIV testing events across the country as well as in Zimbabwe, Africa. So after doing that for a couple of years, I transitioned and went back to New Haven and worked with Liberty Community Services, who worked with ending the homeless population. So the primary population I was working with were people who used drugs and had and who were homeless, and providing HIV and Hep C services, prevention services to that population.
Hmm. Okay. Can I ask you a question? Because we are limited in time. How are you feeling nowadays?
Absolutely wonderful. I think I'm very blessed with the fact that the HIV medication has come such a long way since the beginning of this epidemic in the 80s that I can live a normal, healthy life, and I'm very lucky to be able to take a medication, a one pill every day to keep me virally suppressed. So that way, you know, I can't pass the HIV virus on to anyone, making me feel less of sort of like that monster feeling that I think a lot of people could identify with who are HIV positive.
Hmm. Dr. Sosa, I was speaking about this in the last segment with our guests, and I guess some of the concern is for teens and those in their 20s who may not be aware of what a problem this was. I mean, when it first started in the 80s and the reaction at that time, and I'm wondering if a sense of complacency almost can set in if we aren't careful.
Sure, and I was listening to the callers from the previous segment as well. I think, you know, as someone mentioned, you know, teenagers feel invincible and they don't feel like anything bad can happen to them. And so the onus is really on us to make sure that they're aware. And when we engage with that population, whether it's through a school education campaign or whether it's because a young person's been diagnosed with an STD, it's always an opportunity for us to talk to them and counsel them about their behaviors. And the idea is not to make them feel bad or make them feel like they're doing something wrong. It's just to help them recognize that some of their behaviors might put them at risk for HIV, and then also to educate them about what they can do to protect themselves. So understanding what PrEP is and how important it is and how they can access it is really, really important.
Dante, is part of the problem that in 2019, some people still have an issue with talking about sex, and then if you try to get parents to talk to their kids about sex or sex education or try to do it in schools, some people say, just no, I'm not going to talk about this.
Yeah, stigma is quite a problem in a number of different topics, but definitely when it comes to sex education. And I know that through some experiences doing prevention work in the past, going to schools and doing HIV 101, there were a couple of schools that let me know they weren't permitted to do this without consent from their parents beforehand, which to me is, we're talking about health and we're talking about educating our youth to keep them safe and knowledgeable so they can make educated choices in their future. And I think having that stigma pertaining to these sort of topics is really dangerous.
Dr. Sosa, I have to move on to our next guest. Can I get you just with final comments for 30 seconds or so?
Sure. So I think it's really, you know, we're doing a lot to prevent HIV and further acquisition of HIV in Connecticut. And so we have a Getting to Zero campaign that's included forming a work group to implement, monitor, and guide recommendations. This has included representatives from the five major cities in Connecticut. A big focus of this is having a more visible statewide PrEP as well as PEP, so that's post-exposure prophylaxis education campaign, developing population-specific HIV education and training campaigns at the state and city levels, as well as working to implement routine HIV testing, and this is in accordance with CDC recommendations for all persons ages 15 to 64. So it's kind of a no-brainer. Everybody gets a test without asking for it. And then also making sure that we're implementing a standardized medical care for all people with living with HIV. And if we can do all of those things, we feel we can get to zero in Connecticut as well.
Dr. Lynn Sosa, Connecticut's Deputy State Epidemiologist. Dr. Sosa, always a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Dante Gennaro is HIV Prevention Program Specialist at the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Dante, we'll have a longer conversation sometime in the future, but thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Be well. Bye-bye. And finally, to wrap it up today, we are going to bring in Dr. Roy Steigebigel. And he is a distinguished service professor and professor of medicine, pharmacology, pathology, and microbiology at the Renaissance School of Medicine at Stony Brook University. And the doctor is an expert on HIV/AIDS. Doctor, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. And what is your reaction to Governor Cuomo's announcement the other week?
Well, I think it's a very positive expectation and hope, and perhaps with reality. I think, obviously, one of the important things of knowledge about this epidemic and this infection, that is only transmitted from man to man. So theoretically, if everybody gets treated, so the viral load gets to be undetectable, which means non-transmissible, the infection could theoretically be eliminated. In the United States, I think that's a real goal that could be achievable. Potentially across the world, in Africa and parts of Asia, it may be more difficult, but potentially not impossible. I think we have to remember that smallpox was eliminated by the incredible work of D.A. Henderson and colleagues. Admittedly, that might be significantly easier than the elimination of HIV, but it is truly a potential that could be achieved.
I found something that you just said to be amazing. You said that theoretically it can be eliminated in the United States?
That's right. This infection is only human-to-human transmission. So if every person who is infected gets treatment that makes the virus undetectable, which means untransmissible, there would be no new infections. Now, that's easily said, not easily done, but theoretically, clearly possible. It's a matter of the efforts of the entire healthcare community involving many people, many aspects of our healthcare community, but it is a potentially achievable goal. Now, whether that could be or would be occur before a vaccine is developed, which is now more promising but still quite a ways off, is unclear.
And Dr. Santella was saying that the vaccine may not be available for a good 10, 20, 30 years from now.
I would agree with the at least 10. Beyond that, I think it's very hard to predict scientific breakthroughs. I always remember when HIV was first described as what's called a retrovirus, some people said, we will never be able to have a treatment for a retrovirus. We've never had one, and the way it replicates makes it impossible. Of course, that turned out to be, very fortunately, 100% incorrect. So predicting the future about these kinds of things is difficult, particularly putting a time frame on them.
Doctor, how come people are living longer with the virus?
Well, I think it's because of outstanding treatments. I've been involved in HIV treatment since the beginning of the epidemic. And the first therapies we had were AZT in the late 80s, and that was a breakthrough in that we had a treatment. But it led to what is called incomplete suppression of the virus. The amount of virus replicating the person was still sufficiently high, and this virus has what's called a great ability to change its ability to resist medication. So we need to get to complete suppression, which we now have with new medications. Well, not so new anymore, but medications at least from the last 10 years or so.
Doctor, what do you need for the future to help you do your work?
Well, I think it's a lot of what is already fortunately ongoing. The most important thing, I think, is to find every individual and for every individual who has HIV to be found and for them to understand the ability of them to have a probably normal lifespan. There's a lot of debate about whether somebody with HIV will have a normal lifespan. And it's a very complicated issue because every human being also has, besides this virus, other factors that might lead to death at some point. But right now, I believe the data shows that if someone is treated relatively earlier, they will have an entirely normal lifespan of living.
I'm glad you said that because I was sitting here pondering. I'm saying, what is a normal lifespan nowadays? I just don't know.
Well, that's a great question. I think it depends upon one's basic genetic makeup, what their diet is, how well they exercise, and all those kinds of things that we know do have a direct impact.
So, Doctor, would it be fair to say that you sound somewhat optimistic for the future?
Absolutely, because I've been involved in HIV therapy and studies since the 80s, or 1980. The virus was first discovered in 81. I've been involved in this since 82. So seeing what's happened, we had really no therapies for 10 to 12 years. Then we had good therapies, and now we have excellent therapies. One pill once a day for the overwhelming majority of people will keep the virus to levels that are undetectable with very, very little side effects for most individuals. And if there are side effects, we have medications that can switch from one to another to ameliorate, to eliminate those side effects.
Doctor, just with the 2 minutes that we have left, I have to get your thoughts on how teens and those in their 20s may be thinking about this nowadays. Have you spoken with any younger people about it?
Not really. It's not an area in which I am heavily involved. I think that the HIV care treatment needs a multiplicity of people, not physicians who know about the virus, but individuals who know about social interaction, psychologists and such, school workers, people who work with teens, people who work in populations. Remember, there is unfortunately an increased incidence of this infection in young minority individuals. So we need people who can attach to them, speak to them, be believed by them. So that's not an area which I am active in. Obviously, I'm very supportive of it, but it's not where I am currently active.
And Doctor, we have 1 minute left, so I just want to take that minute to get your thoughts on something I haven't asked or information that you would like our listeners to know about.
Well, I think the most important thing for the listeners to know about is that this infection is now easily controlled by taking one pill once a day. And in fact, there are now in development injections which will last for many, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, which will make oral therapy unnecessary. Whether that is better than oral therapy is unclear at this point, but that is in development. So I think the go-away message is for people to be optimistic if they have HIV, and if they're uncertain as to whether they have it, absolutely get tested.
Dr. Roy Steigebigel is a distinguished service professor and professor of medicine, pharmacology, pathology, and microbiology at the Renaissance School of Medicine at Stony Brook University, and the doctor is an expert on HIV/AIDS. Doctor, we appreciate your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
If you want to comment on today's program, email us. The email is simple. It's tfs@wshu.org. On Facebook, you can find us, and hopefully you can like us, so and leave a comment there at Full Story WSHU. And please remember that all the shows are available as podcasts there on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. That is going to do it for the show today. Sabrina Garone, flying solo, is our engineer. Carrie Frank is the digital editor. Our associate producers are Fatou Sangari, the ubiquitous Sabrina Garone, and Roberta Rojas. J.D. Allen is the producer. Ann Lopez is the senior producer. And Terry Sheridan is our news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to you for being part of The Full Story.